Hello, everybody, and welcome to Module 5 in the Creative Freedom of Apprenticeship. This is Lisa Robin Young, and today we're going to explore how to actually sell more of what you offer to more of your right people. Celebration, more action taking. You may find by the end of today's session that you're ready to actually pinpoint clients that you're ready to fire and maybe even start moving in that general direction. There are only three ways to make more money in your business. You can raise prices, which may or may not be appropriate for you. You can sell to more clients, which may or may not be appropriate for you. If you're a coach, maybe you can only take so many clients. Or you can sell more of a variety of things to existing clients. Now, you can combine those, sell more things to more existing clients, sell to more clients and sell them more things, et cetera, and raise prices. You can do any of those in any combination or lump them all together, but those are essentially the only three ways to make more money in your business. Now, there are ways to have more money, and that goes back to financial frameworks and watching your spending and making conscious business decisions. But when it comes to strictly making money, that's it. But you can't sell anything unless your clients know you exist or your potential clients know you exist and they know that you're the right choice for them. And they can't know those things if you're not speaking their language. I mean, think about it. If I had the greatest package ever to help you achieve exactly whatever it was your heart desired, but I spoke Cantonese and you had no idea what I was saying, you're not going to buy from me. Now, in the American lexicon, when we're dealing with the English language, it's not necessarily that confusing, but it still can be kind of, I'm not sure what they're saying. How do I know that that's really right for me? Some people try to be more clever and creative in their marketing language, which only serves to confuse people. So today is about finding more of your right clients and what to say or how to say it once you've found them. Last week, we took a 5,000-foot view of platforms, and I gave you some suggestions about what might or might not work for you. But the only real way to know what's going to work is to get in there and start connecting. Remember, ABC, always be connecting. And in last week's homework, I asked you to pick a platform, any platform, and just start showing up and having conversations that connect to your great work in some way. Doesn't have to be big. I'm not expecting miracles. I'm not expecting you to have 3,000 new clients and tons of business in just a few days. But here's something I didn't tell you last week, and I didn't tell it to you on purpose, primarily because I wanted to see if you'd actually take action. And this may give you some insight into why I asked you to commit to 30 days in the first place. Excuse me. You may have heard the saying that it takes 21 days to make or break or change a habit, but that's not entirely true. It actually takes anywhere from 25 to 30 days to rewire your brain. NASA proved it by accident. It was an experiment that was designed to test how astronauts would handle being in space and being inverted in space in zero-G, and they made their test subjects wear goggles that inverted their field of view. So everything they saw was upside down from the moment they put the goggles on, and they were to leave them on for 30 days. But somewhere between day 25 and day 30, the test subjects found that their field of view was righting itself. They were starting to see things right side up again, even with their goggles on. And this wasn't something that NASA had planned for in all of their experimentation. Excuse me. So they started the experiment again. And this time, they asked their test subjects to wear their goggles like they normally did, but then on day 15, take the goggles off for a day and then put them back on the next day. Well, in case you haven't guessed it yet, it took 25 to 30 days from day 16, when they put the goggles back on, for their vision to correct itself again. So it doesn't matter when you start. You need 30 days of consistency to see results, to retrain your brain to think and act and behave and look for different responses in different ways. So hopping on a platform and showing up 1 or 2 days a week is probably not going to get you results. And I'm not saying spend countless hours every day connecting on your platform of choice, particularly if it's social media. But if you've chosen any social media platform, you can't just show up once and expect magic to happen. You've got to have a consistent strategy. So what platform should you be looking at, you specifically? What's going to work for you, who you are, how you show up in the world? That's what we want to be thinking about. Now, I can't tell you specifically, this is going to be great for you. You know, you should absolutely use Facebook, or you should absolutely do networking meetings, or you should absolutely speak from the stage. But you'll have a feeling as you're running through those options which ones resonate for you and which ones are like, ooh, scary, no thank you, I don't want to go there. But on digital platforms, so any social media sites, forums, those kinds of things, you want to be looking for sites that represent the affinities and the likes of your audience, not passing fancies. I'm not a big fan of trying to connect on all the new, sparkly new sites that are popping up, these new social media sites of, you know, this little flash in the pan fancy thing of the day. Stick to the places where there are large enough numbers to drive your needs. And it's easy to say Facebook is a great place, but it's not always a great place for people, especially if you get trapped in the time suck. Okay, if you can't discipline yourself, then I don't care how many of your right clients are on Facebook, Facebook's not the platform for you. You want to stick to places, though, that are large enough to drive the numbers that you need. Forums for affinity groups, like train enthusiasts. If you're a model maker, train enthusiast forums are all over the place. If you're a designer, you might want to be in entrepreneurial groups. And sometimes you can find those groups on Facebook. Sometimes you can find those in, you know, online forums or news feeds, other people's blogs. You can find a community being built on a blog. It does happen. The key here is to avoid fads and avoid passing fancies, because when you're investing time in a platform that may or may not be around, and you're trying to build a business for the long term, and you want to establish yourself, establish credibility, start making those connections in a meaningful way for both you and your clients or potential clients, okay? The caveat to that is if your niche is fads and passing fancies, then, you know, you just jump right in there. But I don't think that really applies to anybody in this class. It's the law of large numbers at play. Okay, you want to find groups that are big enough to make an impact for you and for them, but not so big that you get drowned out in a constant sea of noise. And it's the same thing offline. You want to find affinity groups where people are making the commitment to show up on a regular basis because the group means something to them. Again, you might be train collectors, and if you're a model car enthusiast, you might want to go to sites or locations or car shows or things like that, because sometimes they do little model displays alongside it, and you'll connect with those enthusiasts, people who like things that are connected to what you offer. Not necessarily your product, because if you're going to a product convention, you're probably going to find other people who are selling something comparable to you. You want to find the people who like things that are connected to what you offer, if that makes sense. And here's an example of what I mean about not getting drowned out. I live in a small community. It's called Fenton. It's not a very big community. And we have a local group called Toastmasters. And our Toastmasters group, on any given week, will have anywhere from 5 to 15 of our members actually at a given meeting. On a day when there's 5 people there, everybody gets a chance to speak. Everybody gets a chance to connect and talk and share what's going on with them. But in a day when we've got 35 people in the room, we don't always make it all the way around. Everybody doesn't always get a chance. And so I have to strike the balance, me personally, of being in that group and maximizing my time. In the online world, I'm part of an entrepreneurial group that's pretty large. There's over 13,000 members in this group. And it can be a flood, a barrage of constant updates and pings and posts and blah, 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 blah on Facebook, and it gets overwhelming. So I don't go in there nearly as much as I used to when it was only 6,000 people. And even that, for me now, is large. I'm looking for groups that are more in the 300 to 1,000 range because I can show up there, I can help the other members of the group, share my expertise in a way that is helpful for them, and they still remember who I am because they haven't seen 75 more posts come in and push my help down the page so that they miss it. So whether you're in an online environment or an offline environment, and online marketing is my specialty, but either way, the principles are the same. You want to be looking for these places where you're not a big fish in a little pond, but you're not a minnow in a galactic ocean either. You want to strike the balance. And again, they need to be things that are related to or connected to your great work. And I don't care how you draw the connection. If you can draw the connection, you go for it. If it's a group you want to be a part of, go for it. If you sell home decor and it's a book club and you can make the connection and you can talk comfortably about what you do to in a meaningful way to people, then go for it. You go for it. But I can hear some of you saying, well, but Lisa, even if I find these people, what do I say? And that's what we're going to really dig into this week. Last week, I just wanted you to practice having some courage and showing up. Make the commitment to pick a platform and just start doing something. Experiment. Give yourself permission to not know what you're doing and just see what happens. This week, we're going to give you some actual clarity on what to say and how to say it. But first, I'm going to give you a gigundous warning. I'm not going to give you scripts, per se, because scripts don't work for the majority of people. Why? I'm so glad you asked, because what works for me may not work for you, unless you're just like me. I don't think there's anybody in this class who's just like me. Remember, go back to your onlyness. What is it that makes you unique? What is it that makes you stand out in the world? What is your particular perspective on things? That is a real key guiding element to why some people will choose you over me. My clients are generally led to me because I'm no nonsense, I'm pretty direct, and yet I have this level of compassion that says, I see you, and I give you permission to show up fully as yourself, warts, sparkles, and all. Some people don't want that. They think it's too touchy-feely, or some people don't want it because they think it's too harsh. And they want something that's softer, gentler, kinder, more nourishing, less direct, and kind of comes at them in a roundabout way. That is not me. And somebody who has that style can't talk like I do, can't use the same words that I use because it'll come off sounding like somebody else, disingenuous, inauthentic. And that's not what we want. So instead, I'm going to give you some suggestions. But more importantly, I'm going to tell you why I chose those words so that you can find the words that work for you. Ultimately, it's about eliciting a particular response. We want them to make a decision. Whether that decision is yes, work with me, or no, work with me, you can't be attached to that outcome. Of course, we would love all of the answers to be yes, where have you been all my life? I absolutely want to work with you. But the reality is, everybody who comes under your radar is not going to be a good fit for you. And if you've been doing your homework up to this point, you've been getting clearer on who those right people are and who those C-listers that you need to cut are and get them off your plate so that you can focus on serving those A-lister type clients. But, you know, the best place to find your words, the words that you can use with your customers, is from your audience, from your customers. In fact, if you look at my sales pages or my blog posts, very often, outside of my client testimonials, you'll find words and phrases that I've heard my own clients use. In fact, I wrote a blog post called, Is DIY Killing You? And I had several people say, it's like you read my mind with that title. I am so tired of trying to do everything myself. It's killing me. Yeah, and the answer is, while I wasn't reading your mind, I was listening on those coaching calls, on your Facebook wall or your Twitter conversations. And it's not that I'm stalking you. I'm just paying attention to what you're saying. I care that much about who you are and what you're about in the world because you're my client, that I want to know what you're saying. I want to know what you're thinking and feeling and what's frustrating you. The better I get to know you, the easier it is for me to help you get what you need from me in this world. And that's a key point for writing copy that connects with your audience. You want to use their words whenever possible. Because if they're using those words as part of their everyday language, then they already understand those words. You don't have to try and create new definitions, create new vocabulary, create a new language that they have to learn how to speak. Those words already resonate with them. If I'm in my hometown, I talk a certain way around the kids I went to school with. Hey, how you doing? What's been going on? Talk to me. It's been a long time. And I talk a different way with their parents. Hello, how have you been? It's been a really long time. It's so great to see you. What have you been up to? It's the same message. And I say it a different way, not because I'm being inauthentic, but because I resonate with both audiences and I am choosing to speak the language that they most resonate with. If I walked up to one of my classmates' moms and was like, hey, Mrs. Shelburne, how's it going? Lay some skin on me. They'd be like, who are you and why do you want to touch me? And I'm a little frightened now. But if I walk up to them as the respectful child that they remember me as, they're going to be more responsive and open. And I'm saying the same things and I'm being just as genuine with them as I was with my friends. And if you've ever read Gary Chapman's book, The Five Love Languages, it's kind of like that. Every group, organization, or collection of people has their own insider language. What is the insider language of your community or your industry? Like, if you're a direct seller, and I talk about booking, selling, and recruiting campaigns, it means one thing. If you're in corporate travel, that means something completely different. In the music world, I can talk about rests and total space, and that means something. But in the interior design world, rest and tonal space mean something else entirely. So what's the insider language of your tribe? Was it created by an establishment, like an industry standard, or did you create it because it's your tribe? Do you have particular isms that are uniquely yours? In my circle of friends, only a handful of us use the word awesome sauce. And I didn't originate the word. I'm not even sure who originated the word. But I probably use it more than any of them in my group do, so awesome sauce is my ism in my circle of friends. In my tribe, I have phrases like noble empire and inspired life, own your dreams without selling your soul. Those are my isms, and people who are inside my community, they recognize those touch points, those touchstones, those phrases. They're not logos, they're not mottos, they're not slogans. But they're phrases and ideas that come back time and time again in my work that allow people to go, that's Lisa's work. I know where that phrase came from. I know whose work that is. That's how you identify. It's like my signature way of talking, the signature words that I use. And you have some of those yourself. You know, awesome sauce is mine, but if you start using the word awesome sauce, your clients may not understand because you're not speaking their language. It's not a word they've ever heard you use. I'm sorry, what did you just say? Awesome what? I was talking with a friend today, and I don't even know what I said to him, but he heard it as knocking over a pie stand. And that is totally not what I said because we weren't even talking about pie, but that's what he heard. And sometimes when we speak, that's exactly what happens. Our people think we said something entirely different from what we actually said. So it pays for us to be as clear and concise as possible and use our people's words whenever we can. So you can develop scripts and copy to sell your offers, but if it doesn't resonate with your right audience, if they don't get what you're saying, it's going to fall flat. Now, that said, you may find that your audience's language isn't how you normally talk. And that's when you've got to make a decision. And I call this the Jimmy Carter decision. President Jimmy Carter is commonly recognized by most Americans as a peanut farmer. He approached his presidency with plain speak, simple language, and spoke out against nuclear weaponry as just a common man, just a common farmer who grew up in Georgia, just a simple, common, plain, brown paper kind of guy. But what you might not know is that Carter was also a captain of a nuclear sub during his naval career, and he was poised to become an admiral before he resigned. He graduated 59th in a naval class of hundreds. So this is a guy who's top of his class, military. And it was only after his father died that he resigned his post in the Navy, was honorably discharged, and then began running the family peanut farm based on the knowledge that he had gleaned while he was in the Navy about mathematics and chemicals and those kinds of things. This man had a background that was far beyond the simple upbringing as a peanut farmer that he had displayed to the American public. Now, while both voices, the voice of the farmer and the voice of the captain, were equally resonant and honest for him, they were both pieces of who he was. Carter knew that his audience, the American people, would be more open to hearing from a small-town peanut farmer from Georgia than they would a technologically proficient Navy captain who'd climbed into the belly of a nuclear reactor to help them clean up a toxic spill, which, incidentally, was one of the big reasons he was against pursuing nuclear technology in the first place. Had he not been in the Navy during the reactor meltdown, he wouldn't have the knowledge of what nuclear energy could do. But at the same time, if he had spoken on that level, if he had talked about the high-level mathematics and environmental impact of, you know, the nuclear reactor fallout, da-da-da-da-da, then he knew it wouldn't connect to the American public. Excuse me. It wouldn't connect. And that was, above all, the one thing he really wanted to do. How do I reach the bulk of the American people? Do I do it as a Navy captain? Or do I do it as a common man, one of the people? Because I am both, and I can choose in any given moment in time how to relate to my audience. Another way of looking at this is thinking about being a school teacher. If you teach elementary school, you're going to talk to your students in a different way than you would if you were teaching high school or college. And you'd probably talk to the other teachers and administrators differently than you would your students. And that's what I'm talking about here, shaping your language to fit your right audience, whatever your audience is at the time. It's about being authentically in your voice for the audience with whom you're speaking, using their words and saying it your way. So who's showing up on your platform? What words are they using? That's why this 30-day experiment is so important, because it's not about making the sale, it's about making the connections. Which ones of these people are showing up? What words are they using that are resonating for them about your great work? What words are you hearing that are like, oh, I can so help them with that? When they say that, I know that what I offer can help them with that, can bring them that level of joy, can solve that problem. And sometimes you'll get lucky and you'll have a huge, overwhelming reaction. I was fortunate enough to be following a particular blog for a while, and I was showing up, commenting, and connecting as appropriate for months, like, I don't know, 6 or 7 months. And then one day, the blogger posted something about what I call dream scale shame. And it was a topic I had talked about in a video a year earlier than that. So I'm on the blog, and I'm like, you know, I shot a video about this last year, and I started talking about it. And boom, hundreds of people come to my website to view this video. Now, my video is a year old. It's not getting much traction. And all of a sudden, all these fresh new eyeballs, because I was there ready to connect, and I was speaking their language. I'm like, you just said something that, you know, hit on a nerve for me. And they use language like it touched a nerve, and I really resonated with that, and this made me feel a certain way. And so I used those words, not trying to be inauthentic, but because those are the words that they were using. You know, this piece really resonated with me, and it reminded me of something that I wrote a year ago or a video that I shot a year ago, and it's all about this concept that you're talking about, and I call it this, and here's my angle on it, and da-da-da-da-da. And they see me, the other readers of the blog, see me using their words, and it creates instant rapport with them. They go, oh, she's one of us because she speaks our language. If you've ever gone out of town on a trip far away from where you live, only to run into somebody from your hometown while you're there, and you're like, oh, my goodness, what a small world. You're from Flint, too? I'm from Flint, born and raised. And it's like you had to travel 1,700 miles to meet some stranger that's from your hometown. You instantly have a rapport because they speak the Flint language. They speak the language of your hometown. They know the isms of your hometown. You are the insider to them, and they are the insider to you, and you've just built trust and rapport. And you're not being inauthentic. You're sharing with them the commonalities that you have, and you're pointing it out to them by using their own words. Now, my lucky break on somebody else's blog doesn't happen on a regular basis, but when it does, whoosh, it feels good. And the better you get at speaking your client's language, the easier it becomes to have those kinds of moments more often. So where do you find their words? Some of it comes from your customer profile. When you build a customer profile, it's like painting a perfect picture of the person you most want to work with, those A-listers in excruciating detail. Now, for me, that's creatives and personality-based businesses, solopreneurs that are tired of doing everything themselves, tired of making way more money than they actually get to keep for themselves, and folks who are ready to reach more of their right people and enjoy their life in the process. And that's important. You know, people can make lots and lots and lots of money and be miserable. I want them to be able to make more and still have time to enjoy themselves. She maybe reads Fast Company or Inc. magazine from time to time, and she finds Oprah inspirational and a little perplexing. She doesn't quite get Oprah, but she knows she's kind of cool. She's smart. She's smarter than most of the people around her, and she doesn't give herself the credit that she deserves. She's also likely been sacrificing herself for a while for other commitments, like family or a day job or something else that's kept her from really stepping into and owning her power. She watches Netflix because she doesn't really have time for commercials or waiting around to watch the shows that she likes. She likes results. She doesn't stay stagnant for too long. She likes to keep moving forward, learning, growing, improving herself and her situation. That's just a small sampling of my perfect fit customer. Now, do I work with other people who aren't a perfect fit? Yeah. I've had several male clients who I've absolutely adored working with. Because if I waited around for the exactly perfect person to appear, I might still be waiting. But my customer profile gives me a starting point. It gives me a filter. It allows me to know who I'm looking for when they show up on my radar. Who is most going to resonate with what I have to say and the way I say it? There are some people who would think I was blasphemous if I said, you know, I think Oprah's inspirational, but I don't always get her sometimes. And there are other people who are like, I know exactly what you're talking about. Those are my people. And there are other people who are like, Oprah who? Those aren't my people. You know in some level, who, you know, to some degree, who your people are. Who are you writing for? Who are you reaching out to? Who is it you want to make a life impact in? Those are the people that you're looking for. And that's the filter you want to create for yourself. You know, my perfect customer will enjoy the fact that I don't wear a lot of makeup in my videos and that I use silly clips or outtakes to make my presentations more human, more approachable. And that's what I want for you, too. I want that clarity. Remember, our very first call, clarity is the information that gives you confidence to take courageous action, which then gives you information that provides clarity that allows you to have the confidence. It's that circle. It's that feedback loop over and over again. I want you to have clarity on who it is that really loves your work so you can find more people just like that. And that's what this 30-day platform exercise gives you the ability to do. You start to see who's out there in the first place. Do I even want to connect with these people? Maybe they're not my people at all. Or maybe there's a rare gem floating in the bunch that I'd really like to work with them. I'd really like to have the opportunity to share my gifts with these people. So pay attention to what your clients like, what your clients read, what they're curious about beyond you and your great work. Are they more likely to read product labels or newspapers, magazines or book covers? Do they listen to the radio or Spotify or just the tunes on their iPod? Do they prefer news and talk shows or music? Do they hate all that stuff? And I don't expect you're going to be able to pull all of this information out of the ether and just conjure some magical image of who you believe your ideal client to be. These are answers that you come to over time. Yes, you can create a survey, and yes, you can reach out, but surveys tend to be hit or miss with results. I go trolling on Facebook and looking at people, like my followers. I go check out their profiles. I go find out what they are interested in, what they like, what they're talking about, what's going on in their lives today. If their privacy policy settings allow me to do that, that's what I go do. I go learn about the people who've chosen to commit their time to learn about me. So the only way you're going to get to know all that stuff is by getting to know your customers and your potential clients. So it's an ongoing assignment that never ends. Why? Because people change, including you. You change over time. So always be connecting means you've always got to be listening, too. What are they saying? Who else has something that is relevant to your audience? You know, are there a whole bunch of people that have started following you on Facebook, for example, who all happen to all of a sudden be talking about this newfangled, I don't know, curling iron? They're like, it's amazing, and it really works, and yada, yada, yada. And you don't sell curling irons, but maybe you offer jewelry. And maybe knowing about that curling iron is a good thing to share with your community. Hey, some of the girls in our tribe have been talking about this amazing curling iron. Has anybody else been trying it? What do you think? And you're starting a conversation that meets them where they're at. So when you're in these environments, you want to be asking questions that are engaging them to talk about themselves. You know, what's new for you? What's happening for you? We ask that question because we want to get them excited about their own situation and willing to trust us to share that information. You don't walk up to someone and go, hi, my name is Lisa, and I'd like you to trust me to tell you all of your private details, so let's begin. You say, hi, my name is Lisa, I'm new here, and I noticed that you were talking about this particular book. Have you also read this book? What do you think about the book? Who would you recommend it for? Start those conversations. Connect with those people and get them talking about themselves. And someone will say, well, I saw an Oprah's Life class yesterday, yada, yada, da, 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 da. And you can go, Oprah's Life class. 2 weeks ago they had this thing about da, 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 da. And I was really struck by that. It really gave me a new direction in my business. And that opens the door to, well, what's your business? And we always want to be driving back to what it is that you can do for other people. And I don't mean that from the, I have something to sell you. I mean that from the, I want to be of service to you. I'm in this group because I want to make an impact. I'm a part of this tribe, a part of this platform, because I want to make a meaningful difference. And I want to make a meaningful difference with the people that are in this platform. And this is the way that I do that. I show up, I ask questions, and then I drive people back to, this is how I do it. I am a writer. I am an author. I'm a painter. I'm a speaker. I'm a graphic artist. I'm a dancer. I'm a showgirl. I don't care what it is that you're doing, but that opens the door for people to be open and receptive to you when you've shown them that you are open and receptive to them. I've lost some of my best clients because I wasn't listening. I didn't hear what they were asking for. I didn't hear how they wanted it delivered to them. I just kept doing my thing my way. And they went somewhere else. And that's a tough lesson to learn, particularly in a program like this where I'm saying you've got to show up and do things in a way that works for you. So it sounds like I just contradicted myself. But you said I could do it my way. Well, yes. What you need to do is find the nexus, the crossover point between showing up the way you want to and doing what you love in a way that works for you then matches up with your right clients and what they need and what they're asking for. So in addition to what they're saying, you got to get an understanding about what they need, again, in their language. I tried to be clever for years, thinking up brand statements that meant something to me that I thought people could resonate with. But usually they just created more confusion, more questions, which was not what I was trying to get at. If you've been on my website within the last year or so, you may have seen the phrase, own your dreams without selling your soul. Before that, it was build a noble empire, live an inspired life. And all of that sounds aspirational and, you know, encouraging and pretty, but brass tacks, what does that mean? what it really comes down to is that my best clients want to make more money, reach more of their right people, and do it in a way that gives them plenty of the time to enjoy the money that they're making. Those are the words my clients are using. I need to make more money. You know, I really wish I had more time to enjoy the money that I'm making. I'm tired of being the bottleneck in my business. I'm just exhausted from trying to do everything all by myself, all of the time. These are my clients' words. These are my readers' words. It makes sense for me to stop flashing the flashy, ooh la la, noble empire, inspired life, build your dream, own your dreams, don't sell your soul language in my title bars and in my nav bars. Those are still phrases I can use because they're part of my insider language. But if I want to capture the attention of my audience, I need to use the words that have meaning to them. They don't understand noble empire and inspired life until they're in my community. So I need to lead with make more money, have more time for what really matters. You know, sell more without selling out. They get that. Those are the words that those are the results that I provide. So those are the words that are going to be on my website with the next evolution. And when my clients' words change, so will mine. What is it that clients come to you for? This is an important question that you need to think about. Oh, let's say, you know, you sell jewelry. My clients come to me for jewelry. No, jewelry is the product that you offer, but that's not the result. That's not the ultimate outcome. Do you offer them cutting-edge design? Do you offer them simple, elegant home decor? Powerful, inspiring words if you're a writer? For me, it's results. Results and what I call edutainment, educational entertainment. Now, those results might vary, but typically they come in around sales and marketing topics. Sometimes it's work-life balance, but more than other things, it's essentially about results in a variety of different areas. So what do your clients come to your great work for? What is the ultimate outcome they're looking to achieve? You may have heard about solving a pain point. What pain does it solve? They're up at 3 o'clock in the morning and oh! I'm not sure that's always an effective way to look at things. I struggled with this for a long time, especially as a musician, because most people don't solve a pain with music. They're not like, oh, I want to buy that new song by John Legend because it's going to heal me and heal my relationship and I'm going to be filled with joy. No, they're like, I dig the tune. It brings me joy. I enjoy it. It makes me feel good, okay? So I'm not solving a pain necessarily. There's not a specific pain that music is solving. It's serving a delight. It's creating joy. It's giving them a pleasurable sensation. They're feeling good about it. And your products or services, your offerings can do the same thing. They want to feel something, experience a particular emotion. Quite often it's a pleasurable one. So they're not moving away from the pain. They're looking for more pleasure, more joy, something positive. That's a result. And I prefer positive marketing anyway. So I created an anthem that talks about what I do, my ultimate outcome, and the unique way that I do it. The term anthem was actually coined by Sally Hogshead in her book, How the World Sees You, and I'll put a link to that in the download area. She's the creator of the Fascination Advantage Assessment, and I highly recommend, when you've got some spare change, if you haven't already taken it, to go do so, because it helps you see your uniqueness through your client's eyes. Other personality tests act as a confirmation for you of what you probably already know about, oh, I'm an ENTJ or an INFP or I'm, you know, a melancholy or choleric or whatever. You get confirmation on your personality types as you see them. Sally's work looks at how the world sees you. That's why the title of the book is what it is, and how the world perceives your uniqueness. And your anthem is a blend of what you do and how you do it differently. And it's short. It's only a few words. Sally suggests an adjective or two and a noun, the noun being whatever it is that you're providing, and then the two adjectives being the you know, unique way that you're doing it. So you've got a little bit of wiggle room on this, but you don't want it to be this long, drawn-out, you know, dissertation. You know, just a few words. For example, according to my Fascination Advantage results, my Fascination Advantage type is the connoisseur, which means I blend a high level of prestige and passion into my work. I focus on excellence and expressive communication. I'm knowledgeable. I don't try to flaunt my knowledge. I try to use it to enlighten my audience and get them to see themselves in a new light. But I'm also a performer, and I love the spotlight, and I believe strongly in the power of stories to both inspire and educate. That's how I do what I do differently. So my anthem is results-oriented edutainment. Results in an entertaining, educational way. Results-oriented edutainment. That's my anthem. What I do and how I do it differently. But that anthem, as helpful as it is, doesn't always translate well when you're explaining yourself to an audience. A full sentence is usually much more helpful. And this is where you might hear some people talk about something like an elevator pitch. The idea being you explain how you what you do in the 30 seconds that it takes to slide up the elevator. So mine might sound like this. I help my clients sell more without selling out because of my results-oriented edutainment. So your pitch combines your anthem phrase with the results that your clients are looking for. Okay, so I help a particular client, and I could have said I help creative entrepreneurs or I help personality-based brands. I help creative people who are building a business. You know, I help who is my audience to do something. In this case, sell more without selling out. Okay, that's their ultimate objective. That's their ultimate outcome. They want to sell more without selling out because of my anthem, results-oriented edutainment. Okay? And that's just one way that you could scramble those words around, and we'll actually have a worksheet where you'll have several different ways of scrambling those words around and give you something crystal clear. Okay, but your pitch combines your anthem with you, the ultimate outcome that your clients are looking for, what you offer and how you do it differently. Okay, there are lots of musicians and lots of business coaches in the world. My right clients come to me because I inspire, I inform, and I entertain, all three. They want their learning to be fun and enjoyable. They want to know they're going to get results, and they want the encouragement and inspiration to keep them fired up and on track because sometimes doing the work is a slog, and they know that, and that's me. So for a graphic designer, it might be I create cutting-edge designs to help my clients reach more of their right customers. There's the client result to reach more of their right customers. And the designer does this by creating designs that are cutting edge. Cutting edge designs being the anthem. Okay? So what about you? What do you do? And how do you do it differently? What's the ultimate outcome you're actually providing? And how do you do it differently? Notice I said differently, not uniquely or originally. We get hung up on the word unique selling proposition, and if we find one or two other people who are doing what we're doing, we go, oh, there we go, I'm not unique anymore. But remember your onlyness, okay? When you can hone in on what you do and how you do it differently, it becomes easier to connect with potential clients at any point on that sales cycle. Remember that sales cycle from a few lessons back. And you can learn more about anthems through Sally's book, and we've got a worksheet for you to download and practice on in the download area. But here's another warning. We're just full of warnings today. Don't aim for perfection. In fact, if you go to my About page on my website right now, I think it says something about being a knowledgeable, passionate communicator, and that was my first anthem. I am a knowledgeable, passionate communicator. I deliver results by being a knowledgeable, passionate communicator. That's what I talked about. But it felt like something was missing until I hit on results-oriented edutainment. That covers all the bases for me. It's educational, it's entertaining, and it's focused on results. And it really talks about who I am and what I offer in the world. And yes, edutainment is a made-up word, but it works. My my audience has enough familiarity with the words education and entertainment that they can understand that contraction. People get it. So if you have to, pull out the thesaurus. Don't be afraid to be creative, so long as your right people understand it. If you're using their words, even better. Remember, we don't want this to be peanut farmer language if your audience resonates with nuclear subcommanders, and vice versa. Once you've got the hang of what to say and how to say it, you've actually got to get out there and do it. So go to your platform. Start sharing. Start connecting. Start talking about things that relate to your great work. All right? And here's where I can't tell you what to say, but I can give you some guidelines. And the most important one is to be talking about what matters to you as well as your potential clients. And it's important that you have both of those pieces, because if you don't care about it but you're talking about it, it's going to get really hard to stick with it, especially if all you're getting is crickets. Why do I keep posting about this just because everybody else is talking about it? Because no one is replying to me. No one is connecting with me. No one seems to care when it comes out of my mouth. Well, that's because you don't care. It's not important to you. You're not passionate about it. It's not burning a hole in your pocket to talk about it. On the other hand, if you're all fired up and you're talking about the latest green smoothie slushy gold-bearing gift certificate extraordinaire, and you're just all about how amazing this thing is, and you're passionate and you're fired up and you're like, woo, but your clients don't get it, they don't understand why you're fired up about it, they don't understand why they should care, then you're just talking at them. You're just broadcasting noise, and you're not even selling. You're not even giving them the experience of being able to buy from you. You're just throwing spaghetti on the wall to see what will stick. Remember, marketing and sales are conversations. Somebody makes an offer. Somebody makes a decision about that offer. And in the middle, we talk about the offer or elements of the offer. That's a conversation. So what do you love about the work that you've created? I had a client who made fabric art, wall hangings. And I said, well, why don't you take some pictures and post them on Facebook and talk about why you created them or what the story is behind them. And so she started posting pictures of some of her older work, and she said, I remember the day that I made this and we started doing this and da-da. She started telling the stories, and people started reaching out and connecting with her. And the funny thing is, the people who were reaching out were really moved by her fabric art, but they weren't hiring her for her fabric art. They were hiring her for her intuitive abilities and her coaching skills. But it was the art and the storytelling that brought them in. And it was still connected to her great work, because she creates this art from that same place where her coaching and her intuitive guidance comes from. So what do you love about the work that you've created? Share that. Listen to the feedback. Celebrate your audience. If you've got a client or a customer who's done something amazing, whether or not it's connected to your great work, you can say, I am so proud of my client, Susie, and her son, Joshua, who just won this. Congratulations. Connecting in those ways shows people that you care. And what's that old Zig Ziglar quote? People don't care what you know until they know that you care. These are all great ways to start conversations around your great work without saying, buy my stuff, it's 60% off and better than sliced bread. Hurry while supplies last. Time is running out. Because that's when the conversation has ended and the pushing has begun. So let's go back and look at the sales cycle. Because quite often, there are one or two points on the circle where people get stuck and don't know what to say. And there's going to be a handout in the homework where you can jot down some of your own ideas, but I'm going to give you some suggestions. If you find yourself consistently getting stuck at a particular point on the sales cycle, these might be some things that will help you prime the pump and get moving faster to bringing more clients into you. Now, remember, the very first point on the cycle is actually meeting people. If you're stuck for conversation around meeting people, it's typically because you don't know how to say what you do in a way that connects with your right audience. Because a meeting conversation is really nothing more than that, hey, my name is Lisa, and I'm a business coach, and I provide results-oriented edutainment to my clients who are trying to sell more without selling themselves and that whole kind of thing, all right? And I have this great newsletter, and if you'd be interested, hand me your business card. You can go on my website. Here's my card. And just you're meeting them. That's it. I joined the local civic group because I wanted to meet new people. And when I went to the first meeting, I saw two people I knew. So I was disappointed. Okay? This pitch anthem thing helps to make the connection easier. But if it's a matter of actually not meeting people in the first place, you've got to find a new platform. If you're showing up to a platform, you've given it 30 days, and you're like, there is nothing going on but the rent here. Like, I'm getting nothing. And it's not working for you, and you're not excited about being there, move on to a new platform. And that's what I did when I joined this local civic group. I'm like, I know everybody in this room. I wanted to meet new people. I got to move on. And after a few meetings, I realized I didn't have anything in common with anybody in the room and didn't really feel like it was a good fit for me, even the people that I already knew. I'm like, I think I've run my relationship course with those people. So I stopped going, and I found a different group to connect to. For business purposes, get involved where your people are. Yes, you can have your social groups. Yes, you can have those things that you love to do on your personal time. You can have your personal groups, absolutely. But you also need to be getting involved in business platforms. Whether that's an online group or an offline group, I don't care. You've got to meet people. Okay, and those are generally the two sticking points around meeting, is either you don't know what to say or you're just not meeting people. Now, if you're getting stuck at the lead generation phase, which is the second section, then you want to monitor your language. If people are meeting you like, oh, hi, that's great, nice to meet you, but they're not joining your mailing list, they're not visiting your website, they're not asking for more information about what you do and what you offer, you've got to monitor your language and make sure your words are words that your audience uses. Don't use too much insider language that your people don't understand when they're first coming into your community, when they're first getting exposed to who you are and what you offer. You don't want to bombard them. When I started working with a wider entrepreneurial audience, I had to step away from a lot of my direct sales jargon, all that insider language about booking, selling, and recruiting. My direct sales audience got that, but most entrepreneurs think I'm speaking a foreign language. So I had to learn a new language, essentially. So monitor your language. At the client level, if your leads aren't converting into clients, then there's a couple of things that you want to look at. The first one being, are you keeping those clients for the long term? You know, if you've got a revolving door of clientele, then there's something not happening in the follow-up that keeps people sticking around. Look at your offers and make sure you have enough variety without being overwhelming, and that you have the numbers in your lead system to warrant the sales expectation. That's the other thing. If you're walking around going, I've got 10 people on my mailing list and I haven't sold a thing, well, you're probably unlikely to convert all 10 clients or all 10 names on your mailing list into clients this week. That's just not good math. It's not logical math. It can happen, but it's rare. More likely, over time, these people will start to become clients. But every client needs time to know, like, and trust you enough to be willing to do business with you. And the word enough is relative to their needs. And there's nothing you can do to control it. All you can do is be aware of it. I had a client on my list for over 3.5 years before she ever made a purchase with me. I just kept following up. She's my lead. She hadn't converted yet. And then finally she did. 3 years in. She needed 3 years to know me, like me, and trust me enough and have the funds available to be able to work with me. Okay, I'm willing to wait. I'm worth the wait. Are you? I believe you are. So what are you willing to do to establish trust? And this goes back to being consistent with your messaging and doing what you say you're going to do. For example, if I launched this class and didn't tell you that I was going to be skipping a week, 2 weeks in, and then I just emailed you the day before, and I was like, oh, no class today. You might be thinking, oh, this girl's kind of flaky, not very trustworthy, especially if you've never worked with me before. Instead, I made a point of saying, I'm taking a week off, and I want you guys to have that space in your calendar. Please be aware, plan accordingly. And then I did what I said I was going to do. Believe it or not, that is the easiest way to build trust. Tell people what you're going to do, go do it. Tell them that you did it and let them verify that, oh, yep, you did it. Let the results speak for themselves. Now, if you're slipping in the delivery of what people pay for, you may need to look at accountability systems or partners or drop shipping, or maybe you need to hire help. Again, this is where trust is a big deal. Can I trust you to deliver the goods I just paid for? How can you demonstrate that in your conversations with potential clients or leads? When I talk about my clients, I'm very fortunate because people know I have some. All I have to do is say, when I work with clients, that immediately plants a seed. Oh, she must have clients to work with when she talks like that, whether I do or not, okay? Planting those seeds creates the expectation. If I never talk about my clients or the results I get, you might not believe that I actually work with people or ever actually get results. So testimonials and recommendations are great tools to help you communicate your results and how you deliver. And sometimes you'll even find words for your anthem right in there. They'll say, you know, she's so good. She's like a breath of fresh air. She's like this, and she offers that. And I was really blown away by her personal attention and her, you know, excellent understanding of my needs. And those can be the words that end up ultimately becoming part of your pitch or part of your anthem. Now, maybe for you, like many entrepreneurs, the bonus step is where you get stuck in the sales cycle. Most people call this step follow-up. Dun, dun, dun. Been there. This is where our systems and our frameworks come in really handy. Using a client management tool or other automated outreach systems like an email client to help you keep following up. My lead tool is a newsletter, and that's also a bonus tool because I can send surprise bonuses. I can keep following up every week until readers unsubscribe. It's also a nurturing tool, and it allows me to build the relationship with people who haven't yet become my clients and strengthen the relationship with people who already have. Now, there's other points on the chart, and you can review those later. These are just a few ideas to help you get unstuck. We're gonna talk next week at length about pricing, because that's one of the things that you can change in that last area of giving back. Like, do you need to raise your prices so that you can be more generous? So we're not going to go there right now, but it's not about charging more so that you can give less. It's about being strategic in how you choose to serve your clients and live your life. Sometimes raising prices is exactly what you need to do. Remember, I talked about those three ways of making money, more money. Sometimes, you know, if you're not seeing yourself at $500 an hour, it's time to raise your rates. It's time to raise your rates. Because just in the last 5 weeks now, we're counting this lesson, you've already expanded your horizons. You've expanded your mind. You've learned more. You've become a more knowledgeable person, a more knowledgeable business owner. That has value, not only to you, but to your clients. Because when you are more knowledgeable, you're more effective at what you do. And there's value in that because effectiveness translates to efficiency most of the time. And if you're more efficient, you get more done in less time. You're saving them money. You're saving them time. You're worth the value. It's important. Now, before I go into the Q&A and review this week's homework, I want to give you one last tip. Maybe you already know where to find your folks, or maybe you already know how to say what you need to say, or maybe you don't know either. It doesn't matter. You can start on either side of this equation to get results. You can start on the what to say and how to say it side, or you can start on the where to go to find them side. If you don't know what to say, but you know who they are and where to find them, go listen to the conversations that are already being had and look for the words they're using around the results that you provide with your great work. If you're clear on your voice and what to say, but you don't know where to find people, pick a platform. Start looking for folks already using your words. Again, find platforms that you want to be part of. Facebook makes this really easy right now because you can search the heck out of groups that you may already belong to. You can search by name, you can search by phrases, etc. But there are other sites. I don't want you to think that Facebook is my fallback plan because actually I don't use Facebook nearly as much as I use Twitter or YouTube or other sites, okay? Find someone using the same words you are. Go check out their profile and what they like. And Facebook is just, I mean, a treasure trove of information for people trying to understand their customers better. If you're not sure about what to say or who to say it to, just pick a starting point. Pick one. I don't care which one, just pick, because you're going to get results. Now, understand, there's going to be some trial and error, regardless of which approach you take, until you find resonance, until you find the words that click for you, and that also click for the people that you consider to be your right audience. It's got to work both ways. And it's possible. None of you are doing anything that's so far removed from the realm of understandability. There's nobody in that really original, really hard-to-enter market category. There's none of you in this group that is in that realm. So you can do this. You can find people. And when you find them, that's what makes the solid, profitable, sustainable business a reality. So you're going to have worksheets to guide you through. Those should be posted by the end of the weekend. And your homework is basically to work on those different phraseologies. What are you going to say? How are you going to say it? And then start experimenting. Don't expect perfection. Don't expect miracles. Just experiment. Give yourself permission to go, what will happen if I do this? What will happen if I do this? And make the commitment to show up and track your results. What happened? I posted one day at 11 o'clock in the morning and I got no response. I've gone to 3 weekly meetings of this group, and I'm just not clicking with these people. I don't feel like I can get a word in edgewise. All of that data is useful information giving you clarity. Building a profitable, sustainable business is not something you do in 2 weeks' time or 6 weeks' time. We're laying a strong foundation so that you have the tools and the know-how to go out and continue to implement after this class is over. Next week, we're going to hit on pricing and all that fun stuff, because once you know what to say and how to say it to the right people, they're going to go, so how do I work with you? And you're going to have to be able to stand confidently in pricing that is resonant for you, that gives you a meaningful wage and gives you a life of meaning so that you can serve your right people in a meaningful way. So if there are any questions for this week or any of the content that we've covered before this week, please press *6 on your phone and you will be added into my lovely Q&A queue, and we will talk with you and we will have great conversation and life will be fantabulous and everyone will be happy because your questions will be answered. Going once. Going twice. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, that is going to wrap it up. I want to give you one last reminder to make sure you're getting your coaching calls scheduled. If you can't find the link, shoot me an email. I will hook you up. I don't want anybody to miss out because they missed a window or because they forgot or anything like that. This is your time. You can use this time to get clarity on word choices that work for you, languaging for your people, where to look, recommended platform ideas. The sky is the limit when it comes to helping you get clarity and start taking action on building a profitable, sustainable business doing what you love, which is what this course is all about. So if anything comes up between now and next week, email me, use the contact form on the website, reach out and touch me. I am here to help. And until then, until our very last call together, oh my goodness, this is Lisa Robin Young signing off. In blessings and peace, everybody have a great day.